All right, baseball fans, welcome back to another edition of the Roster Rhetorical, the official MLB Daily Dish podcast, episode number 43. Chris Schubert, Matt Goldman here with you. Matt, I'm going to tease it here a little bit. We have a special guest coming up in the second part of the program that is joining us. That's all I'll say. Not going to say anything else. Matt, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. Just hoping that the Giants can hold on against the Cubs here.
I am hoping the opposite. I'm hoping that the Cubs come back and win because my Mets are losing and I need the Giants to keep pace so I can.
Well, they currently have the bases loaded with one out, so I feel like the odds are ever in your favor.
The Mets?
The Cubs have the bases loaded with one out. I think the Mets are dead
because the Mets had the bases loaded with nobody out, and Conforto hit into a double play, and then Cespedes is the pinch hitter struck out.
So. See, they should send him back down.
Yeah, right back down to Triple A. All right, top story this week. Obviously, the Red Sox finally making the decision to promote Yoan Moncada to the majors as part of their September call-up. Matt, does this mean he's eligible for the postseason? No, right?
It does. You only have to be in a team's organization by September 1st. So I think people...
That rule confuses me.
It confuses a lot of people. It comes up every year. I think the shining example to remind people is that Raul Mondesi was added to the Royals roster during the World Series.
Yes, he was. Thank you for that.
That's the second time in a row I've brought it up, actually, back-to-back shows. You just have to be in the organization by September 1st, or I guess really by August 31st. So someone like Joe Nathan, who's in our system right now, could still be playoff eligible. And honestly, I would love to see that. I think everyone was really upset when he left. So I think everyone's rooting for a comeback story for Nathan.
So this move was very expected. I mean, we were waiting for the time that the Red Sox were going to pull the trigger on this. And with what they've done production-wise at third base, Aaron Hill, Travis Shaw, and I believe if I'm remembering correctly, you and I were very high on Travis Shaw when we did a show probably last offseason talking about the Red Sox. I feel like his name came up at some point. So they weren't getting a lot of production there. With the rosters expanding, you know, it was the perfect time to get him on the roster. You don't have to send one of those guys down just in case you need them. And Moncada, at age 21, is going to join a group of young players that are already thriving in Boston. Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, Jackie Bradley Jr. This year, Andrew Benintendi, who came up. And, you know, here we go. I mean, he's the top prospect in baseball. This is the guy that everyone wants to see. Everyone's been ranting and raving about him since he signed. Matt, let's go. This is exciting.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting. I think the Red Sox were disappointed that they had to bring him up now. Obviously, his stats are great in AA. He's got an ISO of 254. His slash line is 277, 379, 531. He's got a WOBA over 400. He's got a WRC plus of 152. So there's no doubt that this man can just obliterate baseballs. His strikeout rate, though, is really concerning. In AA, it was 30.9%. So it's going to be interesting to see how he gets treated in his first taste of major league action. I would wager that he doesn't see a whole bunch of strikes down the middle of the plate, and pitchers are going to try to get him to chase just because he hasn't shown the ability, at least in AA so far, in over 200 plate appearances, that he can really kind of control the strike zone. But he's got crazy power. Like you said, he's only 21. But, you know, this is a move that I think the Red Sox had to make. Travis Shaw started the year off just incredibly hot, and it kind of looked like the Red Sox really lucked out with Pablo Sandoval's injury, that they didn't have to deal with that all year, and Travis Shaw was just going to take the reins and kind of be that homegrown third baseman that they've been missing for so long. You know, they thought it was going to be Will Middlebrooks, and he fell by the wayside. So it looked like it was Shaw who's going to run away with it. But if you go back to June 1st, he's hitting 208, 278 with a 362 slug and a WRC plus of 62. So he just was not getting it done at all. And, you know, the Red Sox are in a position where they can afford to give Moncada some at-bats and figure out if he could be their Alex Bregman for the year, especially with Benintendi. I can't remember. Is he on the – yeah, he's on the DL, right?
Benintendi?
Yeah, I know he didn't tear all the ligaments that people were concerned with, but I believe he is on the DL.
I believe he's on the 15-day DL it was a knee injury, correct?
Yeah, he rolled his ankle pretty badly, and I believe he hyperextended his knee. At least that's what it looked like in the video. So I don't know how often right now the Red Sox are planning on playing him. I think I've seen a couple beat writers say that he might be more of a pinch hitter, pinch runner, late defensive replacement, at least to start. But if, you know, he starts off on fire, not obviously Gary Sanchez fire, I think that's unfair for anyone to ask. But, you know, if he gets a few hits in his first 12, 15 plate appearances, I think you could see him at least get a chance to start for a few games in a row.
Benintendi is on the 15-day disabled list, eligible to come off September 8th. So that is when he will be able to return. But yeah, like Matt said, you know, this is a guy that they're able to plug in because they have guys elsewhere that are playing well. I wonder if this was a team that wasn't playing all that great and was in the midst of a race where they're neck and neck and they really need offense and they really don't have the ability to take a risk and put in a rookie in this spot. But this is a team that is getting the production from other places. Hanley, David Ortiz, Dustin Pedroia, Mookie Betts, Bogarts, Bradley Jr. All of these guys are contributing. So you have the ability to take a shot and let Moncada play, especially with how Travis Shaw and Aaron Hill were playing before this call-up, right? They're not playing very well. There's nothing to lose by giving Moncada some time. And if it doesn't work out, still 21. You don't have to rush it. Shaw and Hill can man the fort down because you have so many other options out there that are playing well. And, you know, you see what you got here. Moncada MVP of the Futures game this year when the All-Star game is in San Diego. So there's a lot of hype around this kid. It's been talked about all year, and it looks like we are finally going to get to see what he has and if he can be a huge player for the Red Sox. Matt, the Diamondbacks are back in the news, and I'm not entirely sure if it's for a good reason.
I liked the idea in general.
Really? You thought this was a decent idea that they had? I don't know if it was them, but the Dodgers.
I think it was the Dodgers' idea, but the Diamondbacks were not going to listen to it.
The story that we are referencing is a Ken Rosenthal report from yesterday, I believe, that the Dodgers considered getting Zach Greinke back from the Diamondbacks. He, in his report, mentioned that it's not going to happen now, and it may not happen ever with, I saw a report later today saying that the Diamondbacks may not even consider this winter or early next year, that it would have to be late 2017 before they even considered this. Matt, what the heck is going on with the Diamondbacks?
Well, I think, you know, we're just seeing teams really, at least from the outside, understand that the Diamondbacks are not in a position to compete this year, obviously, and that they don't think they're going to be in a position to compete over the next few years, given what they did to their farm system to try and compete this year. Obviously, the Diamondbacks do not agree with those outside evaluations, no matter how many people agree. I think everyone outside of Arizona would agree that they are a giant mess. But if you talk to anyone inside the confines of Chase Field, they think they're all fine. Clearly, since, as we talked about on the last podcast, their Derek Hall got an 8-year contract extension because of all the great things that he's done for the Diamondbacks. But you know, I really liked this idea for the Dodgers. I'm obviously glad it didn't happen as a Giants fan, but, you know, I think the worst thing to hear, from the Diamondback side isn't that they're not going to trade Greinke this year. I mean, obviously if they are serious about getting rid of him and unloading that contract, it does make more sense to do it in the offseason when you can negotiate with 29 other teams. But to hear them talk in absolutes about that they're not going to trade him next season or next offseason, not until at least after 2017, I think that's unfortunate to hear. And if I was a Diamondbacks fan, I'd be pretty upset with that, you know, foot. I was going to try and make up an expression right there, and I realized that was a very stupid idea. So, you know, but I do think it's unfortunate to hear them really just kind of throw that out there. Any GM should be open to anything if it's going to make their team better. So, you know, if the Dodgers had come in with a package and said, hey, look, we'll give you Urias. I'm not really up to date on what the Dodgers farm system looks like anymore after they made a few trades and a lot of their prospects have graduated. But if any team, albeit the Dodgers or let's say the Red Sox, anyone comes in with a prospect package that's going to make your team better in the long term, both financially and in terms of prospects, I think that's something that you have to consider. So I think it's upsetting to hear. I'm not sure who that quote came from, but either Dave Stewart or Tony La Russa, I think they need to be more open-minded, especially considering the position they've put their franchise in over these last couple of years.
So what was this phrase that you were going to make up? This is the thing I'm most intrigued about.
You know, I wanted to say put your foot in the sand.
Put your foot in the sand.
And that just sounded so stupid in my head. And
what did you want it to mean? Put your foot in
the sand. I think I was going for drawing a line in the sand.
Or dipping your toe in the water.
I don't think it was that one, but you know.
Find him? What happened there? All right.
I don't know. I had a Michael Scott moment where he just decides to make up a sentence and hopes he figures it out along the way. And like Michael Scott, I did not figure it out along the way.
So you mentioned that speaking in absolutes as a front office is never a good thing. I'm here to make the case that what they said doesn't matter at all because they may not have jobs at the end of the year. These are two guys, Dave Stewart and Tony La Russa, who may not be back. They have done such a terrible job setting this team up to succeed that if they don't get their jobs back next year, then whoever comes in may think, okay, I can move Zach Greinke and get some value back and put myself in a position to compete in 3 to 5 years with some really good prospects. We'll just forget that this whole Zach Greinke thing happened, get our return, they can take the rest of the contract, we'll be fine. So when I hear, most of the time when I hear front office people speak in absolutes, I get concerned because these are guys that are established, they have their jobs, they're more than likely going to be there next year. For example, when Sandy Alderson talks in absolutes, makes my head boil because I just hate that he talks that way because I know he's going to be running the team for at least the next couple of seasons. I don't know if Dave Stewart or Tony La Russa are going to be back next year. So because of that, what they think about this Zach Greinke issue really doesn't matter until the next season starts. Now, if La Russa and Stewart are in charge next season, then this becomes a big topic that they're speaking in these absolutes, that there's no circumstance where they would consider moving Zach Greinke. Then there's a bit of a problem that we would need to talk about where they're at, what the direction of the franchise is, and we've talked about this on the show. But until I know who's running the Diamondbacks next season, the quotes like these don't really bother me that much.
Yeah, and you know, I think one of my favorites in terms of an absolute is, it was a couple of seasons ago now, when Farhan Zaidi said emphatically, D. Gordon is our starting second baseman. We are not trading D. Gordon. And in less than 24 hours, he was a member of the Marlins. So, you know, it's kind of a bit of both. When I hear GM talking absolutes, I don't believe them most of the time. But then also with the Diamondbacks front office, I kind of am inclined to believe that type of statement just based off what we've seen. And, you know, speaking of the Dodgers, we have some breaking news.
I don't have Twitter open. Hold on. Let me.
Courtesy of Andy McCullough. The Dodgers are expected to recall Yasiel Puig this weekend, according to people familiar with these situations. So Puig, your friend, I guess, is coming back to the Dodgers. Obviously, right now it's unclear what his playing time is going to be like or, you know, if he's going to play at all. I think it makes sense for them to play him as often as they can for a couple reasons. One, this is a great time for him to turn it on and showcase that he's still the player that he was in 2013, 2014, and for a little bit in 2015. You know, he was one of the most dynamic players in baseball, and that talent level is still there. He just needs to figure out how to harness it again, and a lot of it has to do with not chasing these pitches that he used to lay off, and now he's just going after him off the outside part of the plate. So if he can help the Dodgers, I think they will let him for obvious reasons. You know, they want to get in the playoffs. They want to make a deep run. But then also, if they are sick of Yasiel Puig, they can use this as a showcase for him and play it off in the offseason as this being the real Puig.
There are questions if Yasiel Puig would ever play another game in a Dodgers uniform. The answer to that question is yes, because he's going to be called up and he will probably see some time, probably in an effort to trade him this winter. I think that has to be the goal here.
I also just saw some. I don't know if it's really breaking news,
but
it's probably not going to make you feel great about Terry Collins.
Oh goodness gracious! Go ahead.
Terry Collins says he knows absolutely nothing about Jacob DeGrom summoning Ray Ramirez to the clubhouse. "Quote: That is news to me," he said.
Oh man!
So that's not exactly what you want to hear from your manager when your premier pitcher left the game with a potential injury.
Wait, and calls the trainer. Yes. You probably should know about those things.
Just maybe a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, so it goes with the Mets this year. That's kind of what the trend is. Matt, Trivia Tuesdays on Thursdays. Are you ready?
I am, I guess.
Do you know what you don't know what the topic is, do you?
I have no idea what the topic is.
So before Tim Tebow tried to become a famous baseball player, Michael Jordan tried it.
So he did.
How well do you know Michael Jordan's baseball history?
I'm going to go as close to zero.
Well, Here you go. We're going to test it. Which future major league manager was Jordan's manager on the 1994 Birmingham Baron? I just want you to know that I was born in 1994. Matt, you're older than me, right?
Yeah, I was born in 91.
So you were three when this happened. So this is going to be interesting. Joe Maddon, Terry Collins, Terry Francona, Buck Showalter.
I know this one to be
really?
I know it's Terry Francona.
All right, Terry Francona is your answer. You would be correct. Which of these feats did Jordan actually achieve in 1994? Hitting for the cycle, hitting 20 doubles, stealing 30 bases, walking 75 times.
I mean, hitting 20 doubles, I mean, no offense to Michael Jordan, if you happen to be listening. I don't think
he is.
But just in case, they want to cover all my bases, pun intended. I don't think that he ever had enough skill to hit 20 doubles in a season or walk 75 times or hit for the cycle. So I'm going to go with what I believe to be the least skillful trait among those categories. So I'm going to go with that he stole 30 bases.
He stole 30 bases is what you're guessing. And I looked it up. He stole exactly 30 bases.
Okay.
Since Jordan obviously never made it to the big leagues, can you name the last Major League Baseball player who also played in the NBA? Mark Hendrickson, Chris Young, Tony Clark, Tim Stoddard.
Oh, man. It's not Chris Young. I think they also did not point out, at least from your questioning, they did not specify which Chris Young this is. So I think I'm going to file a protest. I would imagine they're going with a really tall one.
With the pitcher, Chris Young.
Yeah. I would imagine. But
that would be the one I would have guessed.
I'm just pointing out it was not specified to me, so I think we need to complain to Jason.
We'll get him on the show. We'll
yeah. I don't, he does follow me, so I guess that could happen. I don't think it's Tony Clark, the current head of the MLBPA, if
Do
I have that
right.
Do you
know who the other two players are?
I don't. I've
so,
never,
so this what would you say?
Tim Stoddard and Mark so-and-so?
Mark Hendrickson and Tim Stoddard. You're guessing here, basically.
We'll go with Tim.
Tim?
I mean, he's got the connection to Tim Lincecum. It helped me get a reference in.
Incorrect. It was Mark Hendrickson.
It was worth it.
So you had it down to 50-50, but you took the loss because you could get a Tim Lincecum reference in. All right, it's fair. I got to give it to you. Among the players who passed through Birmingham and played with Jordan was a guy who played in the big leagues and was known, among other things, for developing a case of the yips when throwing a baseball. Who was he? Rick Ankiel? Mackie Sasser, Steve Sachs, or Chuck Knobloch? I think the answer is obvious.
I don't think it can be Rick Ankiel. I think he was too young. I'm going to go with Sachs.
Okay, I was going to go with Knobloch because he always had the yips, but you're going with Sachs?
Yeah.
It was Steve Sachs. Good guess. Which of these categories did Jordan lead his team in that season? Stolen bases, runs scored, strikeouts, walks.
It's got to be strikeouts, right? I mean, he had no plate discipline.
So I will give you the number because I have it in front of me. I have his statistics up. He struck out 114 times. So you
and how many at bats?
He in 436 at bats.
All right.
So you going with strikeouts?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
So I have his numbers here. So I will bring them to you. He played 127 games. He hit .202 with a .289 on base percentage. And he hit three home runs and drove in 51 RBIs.
What level was he playing at? Double A?
Double A.
Well, he's got one claim to fame then. He has a better double A strikeout percentage than Johan Moncada.
Does he?
Yeah, I think you said he had 114.
114 in 436 at bats.
Yeah, so that comes out to a strikeout percentage of 26.1 if Google is not leading me astray.
And Moncada's is?
30.1.
So yeah, there you go.
So there you go.
All right, we'll be right back, guys. But when we come back, we're going to have a special guest, and we are going to talk about the American League wild card race. Stick around. We'll be right back on the Roster Rhetorical. Welcome back, guys. Just got back from break. Matt, we have a guest with us for the second half of the show, and you love doing the honors, so would you like to introduce our guest to the fans of the show?
I guess I am always the one that...
Yeah, you. Every time we have a guest, it's you. So
It's the one. It's my one time to introduce people. But yes, we do. We have Evan Davis in the digital booth with us. You can find him on Twitter at Professor Dobbles. Am I pronouncing that right on for the Twitter handle?
It's Dobbles, but it's
Dobbles. Okay,
who cares?
And he is a host of the halftime broadcast for the Sky Blue FC. He's a contributor for Knuckleball FRS, if that's right.
Today's Knuckleball, yeah, that's
today's Knuckleball, I guess, as most people would call it. And then my former website that I used to contribute for, Beyond the Box Score, and he's now I'll let him talk about this, but he's one of the co-hosts of Beyond the Box Score's new podcast. So if you kind of want to clue the people in that is a thing now.
Yeah, well, thanks guys for having me on. Beyond the Box Score has had a couple of different versions of podcasts in the past and fell by the wayside a little bit. And we were chatting a couple of weeks ago and realized that there is probably some space in the internet universe for the fine voices that make up that website. So we decided to relaunch it. I'm actually the permanent host.
Ooh, okay.
Of the show. Yeah. So I get to wear that hat. And then we have various kind of cast of characters rotating in and out, co-hosting with me, guesting with me, contributing. But yeah, I'm the guy. I'm running the ship. I'm the Johnny Carson of Beyond the Box Score.
So you have dethroned the former host, Brian Groznick, if I'm remembering correctly.
I have. Brian's a great guy, and he gave us our blessing and has been our biggest – he's our biggest fan now that we've got our first episode under our belts.
Evan, is this the first podcast you've ever hosted?
No, it's not. In a former life, I was a stand-up comedian and worked as a producer and engineer for a comedy podcast network called Cave Comedy Radio, and so ended up being kind of like the co-host sidekick for a lot of comedians. So I've been around the block a time or two.
Is it different running the ship than it is being the, you know, the sidekick?
No, actually, I remember when I was doing stand-up, people always said that I'd make a great game show host. So I think I just have that hosting energy about me. So I think it's been a natural fit. And Matt mentioned that I also host the halftime broadcast, the live television halftime broadcast for a professional women's soccer team in New Jersey. It's called Sky Blue FC. So, you know, this is definitely in my bailiwick, I would say.
And that's the first time that word has ever been used on our podcast. I don't have to fact check it.
Certainly on your podcast, I would say that probably it's used three times an episode over at Fangraphs. But that's neither here nor there. Yeah. So I like to think that I'm kind of a natural. I got some natural hosting ability in me.
So on the first episode, one of the topics that you talked about was the American League wild card race.
Yes.
And when you had jumped into our little pre-show meeting, Matt and I had mentioned that this was not a topic that we had talked about on the show. So uh-huh. With you here, we thought you could share what you guys talked about on the show, and maybe we can elaborate on it a little bit here now that some time has passed.
Yeah, well, I wanted to raise the topic because, you know, it seems obvious that whoever earns second place in the American League East is taking one of those wild card spots, whether it's the Blue Jays or it's the Red Sox. That one of those spots is reserved for one of those teams. Underneath that, I mean, there's four, maybe five teams that are in the hunt for this thing. And we kind of batted around ideas about what seemed like the most plausible option. A few days ago, it still seemed like the Orioles were probably the front runner, just given how deep that offense is. But certainly in the past few days, and as was the consensus of some of the people I talked to on the show, Matt Jackson and Rob Rajacki, who are writers with us, they kind of felt that it was really the Detroit Tigers who probably had the best chance to make it happen. Had a bit of a softer schedule than maybe the Orioles did. The Orioles still got a lot of games within their division that they got to play. The Tigers had the chance to beat up on the White Sox and the Twins down the stretch. And plus, you know, as good as the Orioles lineup is, that Tigers lineup looks really good too, between a resurgent Victor Martinez and Miguel Cabrera doing his Miguel Cabrera thing. And then, of course, Justin Verlander is back, and Michael Fulmer is probably going to be the AL Rookie of the Year. Just looks like a really nice, consistent little team. And I was just looking at playoff projections for various systems, whether it's 538 or Fangraphs, Baseball Prospectus, or even MLB.com. And they all say that it's the Tigers who are in the pole position for that second wild card. So, you know, the Tigers, maybe you could question some of their free agent signings in the offseason. And they had some of their ups and downs in the first half of the year. But they've looked like a really solid outfit since the All-Star break. And I would not be surprised if they're the team that's facing either the Red Sox or the Blue Jays in that wild card playoff game.
So I didn't notice this until I pulled up the standings, but there are, if you don't count Baltimore and Detroit, who are technically tied for that second spot right now, there are four teams that are within five games of that second spot.
I know.
Yeah. You have the Houston Astros, who have had a major second half resurgence and have come back from the dead. At least that's what they were perceived to be in the beginning of the season. You have the Yankees, who everyone thought were completely out of it when they traded Chapman and Miller and basically retooled for the future. Well, Gary Sanchez showed up and everything's changed, and they're 2.5 games out of a playoff spot. You have Kansas City, who behind the Ned Yost Devil Magic and Rally Mantis find themselves 3 games out. And, you know, Seattle has hung around all year round in that American League West, and here they are only 4 games out. So I think you could conceivably make the case for any of those teams, including Baltimore and Detroit. So that's 6 teams that you're talking about for one spot that are all within 5 games of each other. We have a whole month of baseball left. Matt, who would you pick as your team that is probably going to take this away?
I still really believe in the Astros. They were my World Series team.
Mine as well. At the beginning of the year. They're my world champions.
Yeah, and they made me look like an idiot for the first month and a half. But that team was just so good. I mean, Correa wasn't going to hit like he did at the beginning. Jose Altuve has been hitting close to .500 on the road since the All-Star break. And Alex Bregman, after his little 0 for 20 or 0 for 30 streak, has really come on. And he's hitting kind of like the superstar that everyone has projected him to be. So, if, you know, if Keuchel can just kind of turn things around and they can get just any value out of that starting rotation. I really hope that they plug Chris Devensky in for Doug Fister. I was a huge Devensky fan earlier in the year, not only because he was pitching well, but he did happen to be on my fantasy team. So I thought I'd really lucked into something, and then they took him out of the rotation pretty quickly. But he's really been an unsung hero for them this year. So I still like Houston. Like you said, The Dayton Moore Devil Magic has not worn off yet, so you can't count out the Royals. But I think it'll be a really exciting last month of the season for the AL.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask because if I were to pick a team that seemed to be the outlier here, and I know they're the last team that I mentioned, but the Seattle Mariners would appear to be that outlier, even though I did mention that they had stuck around all year competing in that division. But when you look at all the other teams, Kansas City on the rise, the Yankees finding themselves to be better off than they thought they would be when they traded all these players away, Houston hitting a stride, Seattle seems to have just kind of been middling the whole year, not really having that resurgence, having that run, yet here they are only 4 games out of a spot.
Yeah, I mean, you can't say enough about those position players with a core like Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, and Kyle Seager, and when Daeho Lee is hitting, they all look great. And now that they've reshuffled the catcher position and brought Mike Zunino back, who is an excellent pitch framer, that's going to help the pitching staff out a lot. I think with a lot of these teams, they're made or broken on how their pitching goes. I think you can say that for the Royals, who had the best record in the American League in the month of August. A lot of that had to do with the rotation, which was a disaster, an unqualified disaster besides Danny Duffy, stringing together a series of pretty quality starts. If they can sustain that, maybe they're in the hunt. Same goes with the Baltimore Orioles. I mean, that rotation is kind of a nightmare, even though they've got such a massive amount of power among their position players. That's the – I mean, that's what's going to prevent them from hanging on. And I think you can say the same thing for the Astros. You mentioned Dallas Keuchel, who hasn't had as strong a year as he did in his Cy Young campaign. You know, you get past Keuchel and McCullers, who do they have? Who can they go to? Mike Fiers, you know? Maybe they bring Devenski and stick and stick Doug Fister in the bullpen now that the rosters have expanded. I mean – I think the same thing goes with the Mariners. I mean, Felix Hernandez, he's never going to be the same pitcher he was at his prime, but he can still offer quality. Hisashi Iwakuma, what is he going to be? James Paxton the same way. I think a lot of these teams, it really they're going to be leaning on their rotations a lot in order to keep themselves afloat throughout the month of September.
So one more thing, Evan, and then we'll get out of here. Do you think there is a scenario where we have more than two teams? Because right now Baltimore and Detroit are tied. Do you think that there's a scenario where we have three, maybe four teams tied here, and we get a series of playoff games or play-in games before the one-card wildcard game?
Boy,
how great would that be?
I mean, I have an old friend who loves to say embrace the chaos, and by that – by that philosophy, you'd have to say that would be really cool to see. I don't really know. I mean, given the way that the fortunes of all of these teams have shifted so radically, even since the trade deadline, I mean, I guess you can't really count anybody out, right? I mean, I don't think that Kansas City has got enough to hold on. Like, if those bats go cool at all, and if the pitching kind of regresses to the mean, I don't think they can hang around. Same goes with the Yankees. You know, Gary Sanchez isn't going to keep hitting like Superman forever, and he is their primary offensive threat at this point. The Astros, maybe they can hold on, but you know, it's very odd. The Astros have been very streaky all year. You know, they were 8.5 back of the Rangers at one point, then they kind of made a big surge, and then they fell away again. Now, you know, they're trying to fight their way back. So, I don't know. It's really tough. I still kind of think that the Tigers might hang on and do this because I think, you know, when you're the Orioles and your main rotation weapons are guys like Chris Tillman and Dylan Bundy, that makes you nervous. But at the same time, I mean, this was not a scenario that I expected going into the season back in April. So if it happens, let it happen. I mean, because it would have to happen boom, 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 one day after the other, given how tight the schedule is in October with that wild card game. So embrace the chaos. That's my position on it.
The Beyond the Box Score podcast, does it have a name?
It has a name. It's called In Play Podcast.
Ah, off of the MLB Game Day.
You got it. That's right. Okay. And we actually stylize it as In Play, comma, pod, parentheses, cast.
That is very good. You can find it on Beyond the Box Score.
BeyondTheBoxScore.com, on SoundCloud. We're going to be on iTunes soon as well. And we also have a Twitter handle, at In Play Podcast.
Awesome. And with our show, you can find that on iTunes, on Blog Talk Radio, on your favorite podcasting app, wherever you may listen to the show the best. Evan, thank you for hanging out with us.
Guys, thank you for having me.
And we'll see you guys next time.